Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Viplis, and you're listening to this podcast, which is a part of the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. So first off, thank you for being here. If you haven't already subscribed to Inside Carolina, go ahead and do that if you're either on Apple Podcasts or YouTube, so you never miss any of the content our team at IC puts out. It hardly takes any time, and it helps us out a lot. Also, speaking of support, we want to support the people that support us, so that's why I've got to remind you all about Johnny T-Shirt. Johnny T-Shirt is the go-to shop for all things Carolina apparel. They've got your football jerseys, the T-shirts, the hats. And as the weather gets cooler, they've got all the Carolina hoodies and jackets you could ever want. They've been serving the UNC fans since 1983 on Franklin Street with the best prices and best customer service because they're locally owned and operated by alumni. They're great people over at Johnny T-Shirt. You can visit them right on Franklin Street or go to JohnnyT-Shirt.com. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers save 10% off their orders. All right, today's show, I've got, as always, fellow Carolina football lettermen Mike Ingersoll and EJ Wilson here with me. Guys, UNC absolutely demolishes NC State in a top 25 matchup, 48-21, in a game where a 27-point margin of victory doesn't even really indicate how one-sided this game was and how this game felt. Mike, starting with you, what were your biggest takeaways?
We did a whole lot better in pass protection. I saw several times the twist game got shut down. So their defensive line trying to run twists on us, our offensive line shut it down. Josh Azudu looked pretty good at left tackle. Frankly, they've got a little rotation going there on the left side, I noticed. And they stick to it pretty consistently, where Josh will end up moving out to the left tackle spot. Awesome Richards will rotate out. And they'll get Monolith in there too, a guard. And I thought he did a pretty good job at left tackle. We did a better job catching the ball too, from a receiver standpoint. Obviously Diami had that one big drop down the sideline would have most likely been, or down the seam would have most likely been a touchdown. But other than that, I thought overall it was a pretty clean game. The score could have been substantially worse than it was. Defensively, I'm sure EJ will get to that. I say the score could be worse. EJ will probably say the score could have been closer, but we'll see what he has to say.
EJ, what about you? What were your biggest takeaways?
My biggest takeaways were that we were once again solid against the run. And I think that really leads into my next point, was that we brought the physicality. I mean, all year and really for the past two seasons, I've been saying that we have some great blitz schemes drawn up. We're just not blitzing with purpose. And I saw Chaz hit the hole and blow up the running back a couple of times yesterday. So I was very happy with that. I mean, you even heard NC State players, which is something I've never heard of, saying that they got out physicaled and they were handled and tossed around. And that's just not something you want to hear from a running back. I don't think those holes will be as big for him next week from that offensive line.
It's not something to hear from a blue collar school either, EJ.
Oh, exactly. the blue collar, we work harder than everybody else. We're the toughest guys on the block. Our school was started by quote unquote tough people. Well, newsflash guy, our university was started by the first people to settle this great state. So, I think our people are pretty tough too. So, but yeah, we definitely brought the physicality, and you saw that on both sides of the ball, especially on defense. And something that I never thought that I would ever say, we made tackles. We tackled very well. We looked like a defense that was good at playing defense yesterday. The only negative I think I'll say is we're still giving up the big plays. I mean, a lot of those interceptions that we got, they could have went the other way. The first one could have been a touchdown. Another one could have been another big play. So, Mike, yes, I do think this score could have been closer than what it was, but I still don't think the score reflects the level of dominance that we showed out there. And I think that if we can just stop giving up those big plays, and I know that's because we have some inexperience and young guys in the secondary we've had to replace, especially Storm Duck. We're really, really missing Storm Duck in the secondary right now. So I think once we get that under control, I think we'll be great. Overall, I'm happy with what I saw, though.
What Before I get into my takeaways, I just wanted to shout out two players that aren't in the usual suspects of guys, and that's Emery Simmons and Day-Day Hollins. Right before kickoff, we find out that Bo Corrales and Patrice Rene are going to miss the game, and there's kind of that worry, like, oh no, like, here we go again, here come the injuries. Emery Simmons was a guy that I thought really stepped up. He had 5 catches for 38 yards, no drops, which is huge for this Carolina receiving corps. And it's something where if he shows that he can catch the ball consistently, I think he's going to play his way into more playing time. He had a ceiling block on Michael Carter's first touchdown that kind of set the tone offensively for the day. And then speaking of setting the tone, Day-Day Hollins, I think it was the first drive for NC State on third down. The running back tried to bounce it outside right into Day-Day. He made the tackle, got Carolina off the field. I thought he did a great job stepping up. And same thing with Emery Simmons, two guys that stepped up. And just my biggest takeaways were this was a strong defensive performance. They essentially forced 3 3 and outs to start the game. They withstood NC State going to another quarterback, something that they probably didn't have the chance to prepare for. And when you change the quarterback, it has the opportunity to kind of provide a spark for the team. And I thought they did a good job. They were out of position a couple of times, but their effort, I think, made up for it, which is critical in these type of rivalry games. You look at a guy like Don Chapman, who they have the coverage breakdown in the end zone, and he hustles back, makes the interception. Later on in the game, Tyron Hopper, he can't get to the quarterback in his pass rush, gets his hands up, forces deflection. Chad Surratt intercepts it. And then on the other side, you know, you guys kind of mentioned it. I was going to unload a clip on NC State. All year we hear about this blue-collar team that plays in Raleigh, and the most physical play that involved a state defender was Sam Howell serving up a pancake and putting one on his backside. And this game, it just reinforced that this is the new norm, that when these two teams play, as long as Mack Brown and as long as Dave Doran are running these programs, Carolina is just going to pummel this NC State team into the ground, despite what any pregame hype video might say. But, Mike, according to Pro Football Focus, 3 offensive linemen, Montelus, Zudu, and McKeithen all graded out at 80 in pass protection, which suggests they had elite games. You had mentioned it in your takeaways that they did a good job in pass protection. What did you see specifically from the offensive line in pass protection and just overall in this game?
I saw the offensive line did a really good job with just a standard 4-man rush, which we've had trouble with this year. We've, for whatever reason, we've struggled with just a standard 4-man rush. We haven't really had much of a problem out of like an odd front, so a three down look. But when you've got 4 pass rushers, we've had trouble essentially in our 1-on-1 assignments. I was waiting to see if game reps and the deeper we got into the season would correct that. And it looks like it has. And I'll go ahead and I'll chalk it up to a weird off season, kind of what I've been talking about the last few weeks on this pod. You know, weird off season, not a lot of prep time, constantly, you know, all week long, kind of worried about whether you're going to survive, you know, the week in terms of, you know, whether you're going to be COVID positive or COVID negative, you know, on the night before the game. Which is actually a theme that I heard a lot of announcers at a lot of different games yesterday across ESPN, CBS, and whatnot discussing, that every coach is kind of taking this survival approach. They mentioned PJ Fleck said something about it. Mac has said something about it. You're kind of – there's no normalcy, as Mac put it. You're just kind of hoping to get through the week with everybody being healthy and not infected so that you can play with as close to a full roster as you can get. And I think so far the offensive line not getting bit by the COVID bug or the injury bug has been a real blessing for them. You know, these guys have finally gotten those game reps, and we've seen a lot of stuff get cleaned up. I mentioned twist games were a problem early in the year, and we're going to continue to see them until we corrected them. Well, I saw us correct them. We still a little bit, you know, some stuff can be cleaned up, you know, passing off twists, but for the most part, it was effective. We're still missing single blitzers every once in a while. So really just a 4-man rush with a 5th blitzer, right? We're missing some stuff. That's just an MA missed assignment issue. I think that's really just that'll get corrected, much like some of these physical errors are getting corrected with game reps. But the real thing I was most impressed with was if you watch the pocket that the offensive line created, it was a very flat, wide pocket. There wasn't a lot of There wasn't a, you can stretch a pocket two ways, right? You can widen a pocket either vertically, so the tackles can take defensive ends real deep, or you can widen a pocket, you know, horizontally and widen it towards the sidelines. And our guys did a very good job of widening the pocket towards the sidelines, gave Sam a lot of time, let him get comfortable, let him make his throws, read his progressions. I think that some of the sacks and some of the pressure was really just a result of Sam holding the ball too long and trying to force plays, which I think he's been doing all year long. But a lot of that pressure I won't give to the offensive line on that. Some of that's on the quarterback. So I thought they did a really good job of creating kind of a mushroom shape, perfect pocket for Sam to throw out of. NC State didn't bring much in terms of pass rush, but I'll give credit to the offensive line. I think our protection was better than their pass rush was bad yesterday.
The best offensive line analyst in the country, Mike Ingersoll, right there. The thing about this Carolina offensive line that's exciting for a fan is that they have three juniors, two sophomores starting across the offensive line.
Yeah.
And with this year being a redshirt year for everybody, this is still a fairly young group that you would assume is only going to get better, which bodes well for this future of this Carolina program. And EJ, you mentioned it in your takeaways. We've got single-digit missed tackles for the first time in Lord knows how long. Carolina only missed 9 tackles all game. It's been a talking point for so long on this podcast. So what did you think about the tackling job in this game, specifically with it being a rivalry with intensity all the way up and emotions kind of flying high?
I think that was exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, we've been every week this season we've done this podcast, we've talked about double-digit missed tackles and actually having discussions like what can be done to make tackling better. Is it a drill thing or is it a want-to thing? And I think yesterday's game proves that it's a want-to thing. Those guys wanted to be more physical. They were playing a rival. They wanted to go out and impose their will on those guys, and that's what they did. They made sure that they made those tackles. They made sure that they were in the right position. And, I mean, and when you're going out, when you're bringing the physicality and when that team knows that you're going to be more physical than them, it makes tackling a whole lot easier. So I definitely think that they need to find a way to bottle up this intensity and bottle up this feeling and transport that to the rest of the season. I mean, you're playing UVA this weekend. I mean, I know that's not – as big a rival as NC State is. I mean, they're right in their own backyard, and they have some of the most lovely alum and fans that you can't help but to remember those guys. But, I mean, UVA is a pretty big game, too. At the end of the day, it's an ACC game. And for me personally, I remember going up to Charlottesville in an overtime game and never being able to get in a win there, even when we know going into the game that we are the more talented, better team. I mean, most of the time we went into those games – we had a winning record. We were ranked probably somewhere between 20, 25, something like that. But it became a game that we kind of put a chip on our shoulder. So I think these guys need to take that same intensity, that same will and physicality and want to into this game, because you see that's the only difference. I mean, we didn't run any different defensive scheme. I don't think they practiced any harder or practiced any more physical than they usually did, especially with them. We're not seeing our COVID numbers rise on our team, like Mike mentioned earlier. So, you know, we're following these protocols and we're not doing anything out of the norm in practice. So that's the only thing that was different about this game that's been different than any other. So I think that they need to take it upon themselves. And, I mean, you hear Chaz speak after the game that they were the more physical team. I think that he needs to tell the guys once they step out of the practice that we need to remember that feeling, how it felt to only miss 9 tackles, to be the more physical team, and need to transfer that throughout the rest of the season.
So, EJ, one observation I had was that NC State didn't have a very mobile quarterback, whether it was with Finley, the third stringer who came in, or the other kid, number 16, who used to be the starter.
Hockman, yeah.
Yeah, Bailey Hockman. They didn't have a mobile quarterback. And a point that you had made, particularly after the Florida State game, was that mobile quarterbacks give Carolina a lot of problems. We saw it against Virginia Tech. We saw it against Florida State. We're going to see it again this week against Virginia, I think, based on what I saw them do in the Miami game, where they had a three-headed monster of guys back there. Mm-hmm. playing quasi-quarterback, right? Two of them were really just super tall receivers, number 98 and 99, which is wild numbering. It's like that kid that played quarterback at Michigan a few years ago, who was that kid was an actual quarterback. But these other two are just kind of like big receivers. They're in there to run, kind of a wildcat type of deal. And then they've got the white kid, number 5, who is their quarterback, the lefty, and he's not bad. He's pretty efficient as a passer, frankly. And he had a big game a few weeks ago, and I can't remember who it was against. It could have been Clemson. But UVA is a team that, if they're going to be doing that, might give us some headaches. Do you think that's going to ultimately impact? You know, we saw this improvement in tackling, like you just got done talking about. I think UVA might be more of a problem next week than we want them to be, just by virtue of the running quarterback issue. What do you think?
No, I agree 100%. I actually took a note in the first on when they put Finley in, they started to move that pocket and they started to get some success. They were running the same plays over and over again. They were running the running back off tackle to the right. They were running that little quarterback option to the left. They got put in trips, a formation that we've had trouble with, yep. And they moved the pocket. I think that's why they brought him in, because I hate to say this, but I guess they were more willing to risk a freshman going out there, running around, scrambling around, than to risk their guy who's supposed to be their guy with more experience, who's coming in replacing, who's supposed to be their guy who broke his leg. So, but that once they started moving that pocket, did get in some trouble, but we caught a big break with that interception.
Which should have been a touchdown.
Yeah, which should have been an easy touchdown.
I think at that point, we were texting, me and EJ were actually texting with Joey Powell. EJ, I think your point was that's Don Chapman in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, because the point I made last week, that with Don Chapman, you're either going to get a really big play or you're going to get something that looks like, what are you doing? Like, the guy doesn't know how to play football. This was one of his plays where it looked like he got the coverage broke down. He wasn't in the right place, but his hustle and effort and concentration to make that interception, because, I mean, that wasn't an easy interception to make, especially once your adrenaline just run up because you're having an old moment because the ball is getting thrown over your head into the end zone.
An old blank moment, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So it was a great recovery, and it was him in a nutshell. But I do think that if they move that pocket, I do think that could give us some trouble. And I think that it breaks our focus when it comes to tackling, because we don't know what's going to happen. Like, oh, this didn't happen on film, or if they change one little thing, we kind of get frantic. So hopefully we're studying film, and that's one of the things that we focus on, because we can't let those big plays and ball being thrown over our head happen again.
Yeah, I mean, UVA is no joke, right? I mean, this isn't a pregame preview pod here, but I mean, I was just looking at it real quick just to kind of give us some context, because I don't think State was – Mack Brown said that against Florida State, right, we're not the number five team in the country, and I agreed with him on that. I think that was the proper statement to make. I don't think we're the number 15 team in the country right now. The fact that we beat a ranked team and dropped a spot, I mean, I guess the Big Ten's getting a lot more credit than I think it deserves. But UVA is not – So I didn't think NC State was the number 23 team in the country either, right? I don't think they're a top 25 football team. But they're not. I don't think NC State's a bad football team this year. I think UVA is a whole lot better than their record shows too. So I got the numbers here. They beat Duke. They dropped 38 points on Duke. Against Clemson, they put up 23 points. Against State, they put up 21 points. Against Wake Forest, they put up 23 points. And against Miami yesterday, or Saturday, fans will be hearing this on Monday, they put up 14 points and they only lost by five. Now they're giving up a bunch of points, but they're also scoring a bunch of points. So, I mean, I think this has the potential to turn into more of a shootout than we want it to be. Does that give you any heartburn too? Just the fact they've proven they can score points?
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does. I mean, we're definitely, I think, playing a higher caliber offense this week, and we're going to have to put up or shut up. Like, I do think that they're better than their ranking. And the fact is, we always seem to have a tough time playing against UVA. So it does worry me a little bit, but this performance and some of the, I guess I could say, the cohesion of the defensive unit, them, us playing better assignment football, us playing more sound football, that this performance definitely makes me feel a little bit better. If we were playing them this game right after that Florida State performance, I'd probably be a little bit more worried, but these guys showed me that they could bounce back and actually play good football. So I do think it'll be a good game.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, the spread is only 7.5 right now for the UVA game compared to wherever it finished at for the state game, which was like 17.5. So It's definitely on paper going to be a lot closer of a game. And another point that I wanted just to mention, it's interesting watching Don Chapman out there and seeing how creative Jay Bateman and Jerry Bly have to be with the schemes that Carolina's doing. Like, there's a couple situations where they're rotating Don Chapman to cornerback and they're moving Trey Morrison to safety when there's no nickel out there. So it's got to be a lot for these defensive backs where you don't really know where you're going to be playing and you're having to adjust and kind of think on the fly, like, what does this position do in this scheme? So it could lead to more coverage breakdowns, but it's something that Carolina just has to deal with right now with the depth on the defensive side of the ball. And going back to the tackling note, defensively, I think it was huge for Carolina that you had your leader, Chaz Surratt, set the tone. He had zero missed tackles on Saturday in 54 snaps. And on the subject of tackling, Carolina missed 9 tackles total, like I mentioned. NC State missed 29 and 17 on just Javonte Williams.
Yeah.
Mike, I'm wondering, does that do anything for an offensive lineman's confidence when they know the guys they are blocking for are so good at making people miss?
Yeah, I mean, I as a player, right, I would know that I don't have to be perfect every single snap. And I could maybe even be a little creative. I mean, you don't think of creativity on the offensive line, but, I mean, it happens, right? I mean, mid-block, there's some stuff, you know, that happens every single play where sometimes you got to abandon your technique and maybe try something a little crazy. Maybe you got to flip your hips around and try to seal a guy on inside zone when you're not really trying to cause a seal, right? Maybe same sort of thing on the backside of a outside zone, right? Maybe you're the backside tackle, you're cutting off the three technique on the backside over the right guard, and maybe you seal him instead of cutting him, just because that's what the defense is giving you. But you know that if you try some stuff like that, that a guy like Javonte Williams is going to make you look good. The other thing too is you don't have to worry about, like, if you're a puller, right? If your job, say we're running 36 power and you're the left guard, and your job is you are one-on-one with that middle linebacker and you need to kick him, right? You need to kick him out so you can open up that six hole even wider. Well, you don't need to be so afraid if that guy spills on you, right? Or if you can't get a true kick and all you can do is just kind of get a piece of him, right? Or if you need to take him vertical, because you know a guy like Javonte, even if there's contact, is going to make you look good. He's going to probably break that tackle. I think he was actually – Javonte leads the country in yards after contact, does he not? I'm fairly certain he leads the country in broken tackles.
I can't imagine there's any running back that has more than him right now.
No. And then you've got a guy like Michael Carter, and it's strange to say, you know, you don't really know who's complimenting who in that situation, right? In that relationship. Michael Carter's another guy, right? Makes you look good. He's so patient. And Javonte, you've seen more of that patience too. It looks like, you know, he's learning from Michael. Michael is so patient when he hits the hole. He lets things develop in front of him, right? And as an offensive lineman, same sort of thing, right? You know that you can get out there and just kind of play, right? And you take your man where you want him to go. And if your guy wants to spill inside or spill outside, you can take him that way and have a lot of confidence that you're probably not going to be the reason that play gets blown up, right? That your running back will make you look good. That really does make you play a lot freer and a lot more comfortably as an offensive lineman.
From a receiving perspective, I think playing with a guy like Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, you're going to show a more willingness to block and a more willingness to put effort into blocks, knowing that you can be the difference that springs one of these long runs. And at 170 pounds, never played a day of offensive line in my life. But from an offensive line perspective, I would imagine you would be more excited to get to the second level, where if you can get, if you could reach the second level and successfully block, you're putting Javonte Williams or Michael Carter another 5-7 yards downfield before they do have to make somebody miss. And you've seen they're going to make at least one person miss every play. And again, it can be the difference between a 10-yard rush or a rush that goes all the way. And EJ, with the blowout, Carolina got the chance to play a lot of young guys. Dez Evans, Miles Murphy, and Clyde Pinder specifically, they played 25, 24, and 12 snaps respectively. What did you see from the true freshmen out there for Carolina fans to be excited about their futures?
I saw guys that were ready to come in and there be no drop-off. I mean, what you expect from freshmen, especially when you're playing behind two talented guys like Mr. Fox and Mr. Vo Havoc, you just want guys that will come in long enough to spell them and just keep the level of play consistent, and that's exactly what you saw. I mean, I honestly didn't. It probably was late into the fourth quarter until I realized that these guys have been playing so much, and just watching some of the plays that they were making. I mean, it's not anything that's going to show up on the stat sheet. I mean, these guys that were out there getting a lot of tackles, a lot of quarterback hits and different things like that. But what you see from guys who are five games deep into their first season of college football without a real training camp, without any real time to get used to the level of play that they're going to have to maintain, it was very encouraging to see these guys. I mean, even Murphy, I mean, he's chasing guys out to the edge. He's making guys bubble out. Like, plays like that, that's what you want to see from freshman defensive linemen. You want to see that they have the basic instincts and the basic knowledge of the defense to go in there to read and react and let some of their natural athleticism kind of take hold. So I think that, I mean, when you see these guys get into this game, I think that you're going to – that bodes well for the rest of the season. These guys are going to start wearing down. Guys are going to start being injured. And Lord forbid, I mean, as safe as we try to be, it seems like COVID just seems to find some of these teams, some of these places. I mean, that's one of those things that you can't really control. So I'm very happy, and it was very rewarding to see these guys go into the game. I mean, I think that if we can continue to increase that and spell these guys more, I think – we're going to end up seeing some big plays from some of these guys. There's not a lot of film out there on them, and that's always an advantage when you're putting a player into the game, especially with as creative as we can be on defense. And believe it or not, just like there can be packages for players on offense for a certain running back or quarterback or wide receiver, there can be plays for certain defensive linemen. Heck, I mean, we had them for Dante Page-Moss, Quentin Coples, mm-hmm. or Michael McAdoo when I was in school. So there can be certain packages for some of these defensive linemen where they're going on certain stunts or they're doing something creative or showing their athleticism, looking like they're going to pressure and drop out in the coverage. So there are a lot of different things that are positives from them playing. So I was very encouraged about that, and I hope I get to see them out there a little bit more.
Defensively, I think it's impressive that they all looked the part, and you could throw in guys outside of that defensive line, guys like Tony Grimes and like Jaquarius Conley, who all looked the part for guys who are true freshmen in college. A guy like Tony Grimes is supposed to be a high school senior. So especially along the defensive line, outside of the quarterback position, I think that's going to be the biggest where Carolina has to hit on the development the most to take that next leap to contend with the Clemsons. And I think it's an encouraging sign when you have guys like Murphy, Pinder, and Dez Evans already kind of showing out as true freshmen. Speaking of true freshmen, Mike, we saw Sam Howell ball out last year. Saturday, he has a ho-hum average day by Sam Howell standards, 18 of 29, 264 total yards, 2 touchdowns, and that one pancake block that we mentioned before. Yeah. After the game, he was asked about the NC State pregame hype video, and he said, quote, "We don't really care about them. We know what a ram is to a wolf. I think we saw that out there today. It could have been a lot worse," unquote. What did you make of that where you have a quarterback that can talk the talk and walk the walk?
Well, Sam doesn't chirp much. So there had to be stuff going on and I say there had to be. I mean, EJ, you and, you know, me, we all know that there was stuff going on out on that field that, you know, you don't see on the TV copy, and that Mike Golick from Phoenix and Dave Pash from wherever he was he was calling the game from. You know what I mean? Like they you're just not seeing that because you're not on the field. Marty Smith might have heard some of it, right? But you know, to push Sam to a point to where he's going to do something like that and say something like that in a post game, he's a pretty reserved guy. He's a fairly composed guy. So for him to say that was pretty awesome. For the fans that don't know, I will give NC State's media team credit. Okay, that hype video was objectively pretty good. I mean, F State, but objectively, the production quality was pretty primo.
Ours was better.
Ours ended up being a whole lot better. And then the Curb Your Enthusiasm trolling job afterwards from our video crew was the icing on the cake. If anybody hasn't seen that, that the post game video posted to the Carolina Football Twitter account was it was the end of the NC State hype video. What's a ram to a wolf? And then cue the Curb Your Enthusiasm outro music and just a preceding clips of just drubbing NC State all over the field. So it was awesome all around. But yeah, you're right. You make a good point with Sam bringing something up like that. You know, there was clearly something happening on that field that he felt like he needed to address, or still had his blood boiling that he needed to address. But you know, Sam, the other point you make was a ho-hum day at 250, 260 some odd yards, right? Two touchdowns, filling up the stat sheet with a pancake block. You know, we're seeing a lot of that from Sam this year. It's not 350 yards and four touchdowns. And, you know, he's not putting up Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers video game numbers right now. And the reason for that is that we're running the ball so effectively. Credit to the offensive line and the running backs, but we don't need to lean on Sam the way that we did last year. I think that might be forcing him to try and press a little bit, trying to make plays that may not necessarily be there, which is causing him to hold the ball a little bit longer. But for the most part, he's fairly efficient. He's making the right decisions. He looks like a better pocket quarterback this year than last year, even though his stats have dropped off. He seemed a little more frantic last year as a freshman, which is to be expected. This year, he seems more measured in the pocket. He's making better, cleaner decisions, I think. But our running game has been so strong that his stats just aren't going to be gaudy this year like they were last year, I don't expect.
Yeah, I love it from Sam Howell. I think if you look back at Carolina football and say 20 years, I think Sam Howell is going to be the most important commit and the most important player to ever come through the program. And I just love the swagger he plays with. And if you're in that locker room with him, he's a guy that you want to play with every day on Saturday. And then just in these rivalry games, Sam Howell, the past 2 years, he's has like 669 total yards, five touchdowns, just one interception in Carolina's two wins. In the last two games against State, Chaz Surratt has 12 tackles, two sacks, a forced fumble, an interception, zero missed tackles. Last two games against NC State, Javonte Williams has 28 carries, 218 rushing yards, and six total touchdowns. So right now, the core of this Carolina team, it feels like they understand the significance between this rivalry. Even if they don't want to talk about it, there's a clear change from the 2018 team and the 2019-2020 team, where the best guys understand that they have to put their best performances in this game because it matters in recruiting. It matters on the field, off the field, when the boosters are going to work every day and hearing about it from their NC State fans. Whatever Mac Brown, and you also have to give a lot of credit to the leaders on this team, whatever they're doing in the locker room in these rivalry games, it's been working right now. And EJ, Carolina, they have a great game this week. They head to Charlottesville next week off this dominant win, but they're also just 2 weeks removed from a huge letdown performance at Florida State. If you're in this locker room, how would you handle this upcoming game?
I would just have to approach it the same way they approach this game. I mean, you have to go in thinking that, I mean, rivalry week games really need to be separated from the rest of the season. And that doesn't matter how much attention you try to put to them. I really honestly think that there was no extra emphasis inside Carolina's locker room about us playing NC State. I think the players took it upon themselves and they just kind of intrinsically knew what this game meant. So these games are kind of a one-off. So I think that they need to immediately bring their minds back to what they felt when they left Florida State, how to really be getting dominated on both sides of the ball, minus a decent defensive performance in the second half of that game. I think they need to remember what that felt like. They need to remember what that felt like. Not think about the NC State game and that win until the night before the game. And hey, I want to go back and I want to feel that way again after we're done during our work on Saturday. But they just have to remember that feeling. I mean, we've shown that we can do it on both sides of the ball. We put together a complete game on Saturday. And I think that, I mean, it really is simple. I mean, I don't want to try to over-explain it, but they just have to remember the feeling of leaving Florida State, leaving that L, walking into a game that they're supposed to win, that they're heavy favorites, and just dominate. They need to go and really prove that, hey, we're the number 15 team. We started out this week number 14, and we won. We beat a ranked team, as Mike mentioned earlier, yet we're still dropping in the rankings. I mean, there's some level of disrespect there. Yeah. I mean, just because the Big Ten's playing, there's still that level of disrespect there. So we still need to go out and earn our respect. At the end of the day, we need to put ourselves in a position, which I know they'll never let this happen for an ACC team, that when it comes time to pick those four playoff teams, even if we don't beat Clemson in the ACC championship game, that it's a real hard decision to keep us out because of the performances that we've shown and the resume that we put together. Let Florida State be the only blemish on our record, and let's finish this thing out strong. I think that needs to be the mindset for every game the rest of the season.
Mike, what about you? How would you be approaching this game at UVA so you don't have a repeat of what happened in Tallahassee?
Yeah, I mean, you need, just like EJ said, you need to remind yourselves that you are now back in the position that Carolina football has been in for a long time. Some of these guys don't – guys like Sam Howell, right, the only Carolina football they know is last year, right? They know 6-6 regular season and a bowl win. But, you know, for some of the older guys, you know, it's a disrespect thing. EJ is exactly right. We beat a ranked team and we dropped a point in the rankings. Now, we talked off air that, you know, we were ranked 14th and tied with Wisconsin. Last week in the rankings, Wisconsin jumped. You know, we also saw a big jump from Michigan. We saw a massive drop from Penn State, and then we beat a ranked team. And again, I don't think NC State was the number 23 team in the country, you know, realistically, but they were still there. And we still beat a ranked team and we dropped a spot as opposed to even going up a spot or even just staying where we were. I think that's, you know, whereas before I thought we were overranked at number 5, I think we're now being underranked at 15. You know, I think our sweet spot right now, we should probably be the 12th or 13th team in the country. And that should put a little chip on these guys' shoulders. But, you know, you avoid the letdown by going in to this Virginia game, understanding that the only way that you're going to lose is if you beat yourselves, right? We lost to Florida State. This team lost to Florida State, not we. I'm not in the locker room. But that team lost to Florida State because that team beat itself. The mistakes that they made, some of the coaching flubs and the game mismanagement and stuff, we can get into all that, right? But ultimately, that team as a whole, from the staff to the players, made enough mistakes to beat themselves. There was nothing that Florida State did that Carolina can't handle. And we saw it in the second half, right? Even with what I'll argue was a bad game plan, even in the second half, our players were still talented enough and still efficient enough to put up points and put themselves in a position to win that game in spite of themselves. This is going to be a similar type of game. This is going to be a bare knuckle fight with Virginia. It always is. They talk as much, if not more, trash than anybody we always play on the schedule. I don't know what all that's about. Virginia has, you know, a reputation. Every Virginia team that I played against was cheap and dirty and throwing punches after the play. The only thing that's going to beat Carolina is themselves. If they lose their composure, if they don't execute, and if they're not efficient, that's how Carolina loses this game. That's how they have another letdown like Florida State. There should not be another game that truly challenges this team until they go to South Bend to play Notre Dame. That's just the way that it is. And they need to keep it in their mind that every game is important. And they have to win each game to put themselves in a position to when they play, when they go up to South Bend, when Notre Dame comes to Chapel Hill, there shouldn't be another game that challenges them really until Notre Dame comes down to Chapel Hill. But to put themselves in a position where that game is respectable and that game has the hype that it really should have, Carolina's got to take care of every game each week and put emphasis and importance on every game each week and not get to looking down the road, but understand that there is a pot of gold, no pun intended, when Notre Dame comes to town, right? And if we beat Notre Dame, right, you really are in the position that EJ is talking about. You beat Notre Dame, then you go and you beat a really good Miami team. You've put together a really impressive regular season. Florida State is a bad blemish, but it's an early blemish. We'll see if we get the kind of forgiveness that an Ohio State or some of these other, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12 schools will get. A little benefit of the doubt going on there. But again, the only thing that can beat this Carolina team is itself. That's how you avoid the letdown, is you control the things you can control, and you do the things that you know how to do, and you do them well. And don't worry about everybody else. Kind of like NC State was talking about in their own little hype video, right? It's not about them. It's about us. Well, for real, this Carolina team, it really isn't about them. It is about us. As long as they take care of the things that they can take care of, they should be fine. This Virginia game will be a very good test, particularly on the defensive side.
Yeah, for UVA's sake, you're hoping that they don't put out a hype video to hype up this Carolina team. And besides the Florida State performance, this Carolina team also has the fact that they lost to this Virginia team just a year ago. Now, I know it's a completely different quarterback, and Bryce Perkins was a quarterback who can just go out there and win you a lot of games, especially as that dual threat option. But that's something that should still be fresh on this Carolina team, that despite their ranking being 15th in the country, this is still a team that beat them last year and should just kind of add more fuel to the fire. And Carolina at Virginia, the South's oldest rivalry, on Halloween. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff. It gives Mike plenty of time to go out trick-or-treating and be home in time for kickoff. Looking forward to breaking it down with you guys already.
Thanks, man. Oh, hey, Vip, before we go off the air, you looked really good on The Bachelorette this week.
I didn't see the guy who you're talking about, so I'm going to have to look
Dale,
that up.
Dale, the guy who's rumored to win. Yeah, Dale.
I'll have to look him up, but thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.